Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 US-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Some cars are comfy on the inside but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated, and right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry, before they're all gone.
All right, it is Film Study with Ken McCusick. To look back at the Week 14 loss, 39-38, Ravens lost to the Steelers, as we all know, as we all want to forget. But let's remember it for at least another 30, 40 minutes. Ken McCusick, how are you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm set to get ready for another week of Ravens football that hopefully this time, if we score 38 points, that's a victory.
Yeah, let's hope on that against the Browns.
Right. I mean, scoring 38 to start, no matter who you're playing against, 38 points, you should be winning the game.
There you go. It's like losing a baseball game 12-11. You know, it hurts extra. You know, you've You obviously went all out to win the game. You probably used a lot of the playbook, kind of like using your whole bullpen, and to still lose that game was disappointing at the least.
Especially to have a two-possession lead in the fourth quarter. That is, it's like going into the ninth up by three runs. And
it's that's crazy. True. And your closer's going to blow a game once in a while, like as you know, Josh. But I hope that the blame for Pease is severely reduced this week. And obviously, we've got some things to discuss along that line. But I just want to say that the Ravens had only blown one lead of 3 points at any time during a game this year previously, and that was by Minnesota. And I saw some talk about this on Twitter today, and Twitter said, well, you know, none of the games were close, so we didn't have really any leads to protect in the fourth quarter. Well, they weren't close because the Ravens' defense stepped on the throat of the opposition and created a bunch of turnovers to make those games not close basically every other time. That's how Miami worked. That's how it worked at Cincinnati in week one. That's how it worked at Cleveland in week two. Those aren't the only games. I mean, they've been...
Right.
Five games this year that really were the defense stepping on the gas to win it. Green Bay would be another one. Detroit is another one. Where the defense really stepped on the gas to win the game late.
Yeah, this is the first game you can really say that the defense blew it. And we've got some positives to talk about. We got to talk about focus on the offense. But there is a lot of talk this week about the who to blame because of that 1 point difference. Because you can look at. For 1 point, any little thing can change that game. So let's get the negative out of the way, and let's look at who to blame. And since this is the offensive podcast, let's start on the offensive side. And that really comes down to that end of the game, right?
Yeah, I mean the end of the game. Obviously, the Ravens had a chance to put that game away on the possession with just over 2 minutes remaining. I forget the exact amount of time, but they needed to. Have a first down on four downs or on three downs there. They threw an incomplete pass on first down. I didn't really have a problem with opening up with a pass there because I think you need to stay aggressive and stay trying to advance the football. They effectively ran the ball on second down, which I think was very necessary. They got 7 yards with Collins off the right side. So now they're set up third and three. So you've got a couple different possibilities here. You can run the ball and try and get the first down either on one play or perhaps on two, because this is a fourth down situation where the defense has just been on the field for a long stretch both times that I think it would have been perfectly reasonable to go for it on fourth and one, even with the risk associated. And we've come up with this last year, unfortunately, a very similar situation in the Ravens-Steelers game where the Ravens did not completely get the clock run out. They gave the ball back to the Steelers with 1:18 left when Juszczyk scored. And they could have taken more time off the clock by being ready in the huddle with a play that would have had nobody scoring on the play. But just break through, get the first down, get
right.
as far as you can, but don't score.
Right, that Christmas Day last year.
That was Christmas Day last year. So anyway, this third, fourth down situation was a little bit similar to the Belichick situation a few years ago when he went on fourth and two against the Colts from his own 29. And so this was third and three and then fourth and three at the 32-yard line, and it would have been very similar in terms of the total distance involved and probably the chance of getting the first down as well. The nice thing about not getting the first down in that situation, if you fail, obviously it's not good to give the ball back to the Steelers, but if you did, you give it back to them with the ball in three-down territory instead of four-down territory, and that can have great opportunity for you to conserve clock if you do that. So you force them to either make a first down and three downs or kick a field goal because you can't risk, you know, losing your scoring opportunity. Whereas if
sure.
they get the ball at their own 30, they have to play four down football until they get in first in field goal range.
Gotcha. All right, so it's clear that you are not happy with the way Marty Mornaway called the game near the end there. Is it Marty that I should be upset with on the offensive side, or should I be upset that Macklin did not get his feet down? Is that a play that he should have known where that sideline was?
I think always the receiver should know where the sideline was, and that's a little disappointing that he wasn't in the game enough to have that figured out. I don't recall how much physicality there really was on the sideline. It kind of looked like he just got his heel out of bounds and he really wasn't very aware.
Yeah, he stepped out when turning or something, it looked like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. I thought he had an alligator arms play earlier in the game that I didn't like that much, so there's been some things from Macklin this year that you know, don't make me terrifically happy with him. I, you know, you hear things around the about him in the clubhouse. I hear he's a little bit different as a player. He's not necessarily, you know, the center of teammate attention, whatever you want to call it.
He's a wide receiver. If there's one thing we know, wide receivers are different guys. They like
very rarely. They're very rarely team leaders. Your wide receiver is very, very rarely a team leader. You know, they want the football. There's other people competing with them for the football, and they tend to be egomaniacs.
Yeah, and you got to remember that before they were on this football team, they were the star. Before they got to the NFL, they were the man. They were the guy. And no matter how much struggling they're doing in the NFL, it's not going to change that process of their entire life. They've been the guy.
That's right. But I think more than Macklin, I think my understanding is when the offensive line got back to the sideline, they were furious at Mornhinweg for not allowing them to create the first down to win the game.
Now, so they were upset at the play calling as the offensive line, that it kind of showed that they didn't trust him, they didn't trust that line. How much freedom does Flacco have in that? If they get in the huddle and that offensive line fights and says, "Hey, just let us do it. We can do this." Is Flacco have the freedom to call an audible and do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he certainly would have the ability to check. And most times, the quarterback at least has a run pass check to change to, because that's the standard thing you do. Maybe there might be some times in the game where you might have two passes where you're checking from on 3rd and 8 or something. But on a typical 2nd and 10, you know, a 3rd and 3 even, you might have two different. You might have a run and a pass you can check to. Certainly, a 3rd and 1, you have a run and a pass you would check to.
Right. Of course. It's. I'm asking Flacco to call out of it when Flacco has the same thought of the offensive line as I can get the ball where it needs to go. I can do this.
Yeah, he did, and you know, that was one of the things Joe did real well in the Super Bowl. The 3rd and 1 to Bolden, which lengthened the Ravens' field goal drive that put them back up by 4 or 5. I think it was 5. He actually checked into that call. He audibled out of a run call on 3rd and 1, threw the ball up for Bolden on the right sideline. He caught it, and that got him the drive that went up 34-29. And then they held off at the 5-yard line with a 5-point lead, gave up the safety to make it 34-31, which is where we ended. So, you know, he's done some good things in his career, you know, in regard to making good choices as far as that goes. But the offensive line, as I hear it, were very upset about not being allowed to block for the first down on that drive when they had done a pretty damn good job blocking for Collins in that game.
Right, when Collins was having a great game, we'll get to him, but it seemed to me like his best game of the season, and the line was doing a good job. It did seem like some strange play calling there at the end. But this week, so you say the offensive line was furious at Marty. It seems like at least everyone who's calling into the radio stations is upset with Dean Pees. And I want to first start with this audio from, because of course they had to ask him in the press conference about covering Antonio Brown.
Base a call based on down and distance, what their personnel is in the game, and what their tendencies are in those situations. Okay? So on the very first 3rd and 4, we called 1 double. Now, who would you think we're trying to double? 84. Okay, and on that 3rd and 4, they ran a driver out for a first down because that was the guy that was open. Okay, so in the last play, the last 3rd down, what was the down distance? 3rd down and 4. So I tried to call a coverage that's a little tighter coverage to try to get them to 4th and 4 to try to end the game. Okay, so you can be criticized for being too soft. If I would have played zone and he completed one underneath for 4 yards, why wouldn't we try to get up there and get him? Or you can be criticized for being too aggressive and trying to play man and trying to get up there and get him. And the truth is, we got beat on release. We tried to get up there. We tried to be aggressive. I tried to change the call from the first 3rd down and 4 that I ran. It was also based on study over the entire week that this is what they do. And generally on 3rd and 4, they aren't throwing a 9 route down the sideline. But he did. And so he did. And that's where my call came from. So, you know, hey, I've been used to that for a long time. If it works, you're great. If it doesn't, you should have done this. So,
So Dean Pease is very defensive there at the podium. What was your assessment of Dean Pease in this week and this season?
Well, let's start with that interview there. I thought he did a very good job of explaining the call and why. And I don't really take his actions as being particularly defensive or his speech.
Okay.
His manner.
Well, then he just came prepared to say, this is why I thought this way.
Right. I think he's been fairly self-effacing about what happened this week. I don't really blame it on him. The Steelers did a marvelous job of protecting the football in this game. The Ravens had three opportunities for turnovers, one on Levine's PD, one on the ball that was almost intercepted by Suggs, another on the ball almost intercepted by Humphrey. They convert any of those three, like any one of other 30 plays in this game, the result has changed in terms of the outcome.
Sure. Right.
But in 60 whatever passes it was, I think it might have been 67 dropbacks, there's no excuse for the Ravens not getting any interceptions. And there's also, it's not repeatable. So if the Ravens go back to Pittsburgh, first of all, I wouldn't expect him to throw 67 times again. But if he throws a lot again because of the success they had, I expect the Ravens to pick him off. And I expect the Ravens to sack him a couple times and maybe get the football loose from Ben once. I mean, it just, this is the kind of thing that it's a once in a very few, one in very many times that you'll get this much risk taken on offense and not have something go wrong. And the Steelers got it done. You give them the credit, I think, in this case, more than you give the Ravens the blame.
Right.
And
people like to forget about the fact that as much as we game planned against the Steelers, they also game planned against the Ravens.
That's
and
right.
There's a lot of trying to out-coach and out-think the other sideline.
There sure is. And they've got a quarterback who is adept at taking advantage of what the defense gives him. He's a good hot read quarterback. You know, because of his height, he has good sight lines always in terms of where he can get rid of the ball. And there's just a lot of positive things about Ben Roethlisberger that make him able to take advantage of the Ravens' defense. So it is what it is. Pease has had such a good season. The defense has had such a good season. He's adapted to the dime defense finally. And, you know, we've talked about that a number of times, so we won't do that again. But,
right.
A very positive change from this year. He made changes from the first half to the second half in terms of getting the right pressure in the game. They had much more pressure in the second half. And he made a change in this case that didn't work out. And I guess the other one we really want to make sure we hit on, even though we're on the offensive side here, let's talk about this really quickly, is that he also came out this week and he talked about how he should have put Marlon Humphrey on Brown.
Right.
Well, here's the thing. Antonio Brown was lined up on the right side to take advantage of Carr. So they could switch sides, but I think what Pease is really saying is that he needed to take Carr out of the outside corner position because of all the speed they have and put Kennedy there. I think that's really what we're hearing. And it wouldn't even surprise me that we'll see that change coming this week with Hill going to the slot. The Browns are another team with a ton of speed on the outside, most notably Josh Gordon, but they also have Coleman on the outside. And those are two guys that you want to make sure you have somebody covering that can do the job. So I think that Kennedy and Humphrey, maybe the two to get the outside starts or most of the outside snaps at least this week. And
gotcha. Yeah, because to say it's easy to say Humphrey should have covered Brown because Humphrey had a good night, but you didn't do that because you did not want a rookie on one of the best wide receivers in football. And Humphrey had a great night because he didn't have to cover Brown.
Right, well, he did have a great night. And he had a great night covering the number two receiver, and most of the time he was on his own, but he did have, in cover two situations, Weddle is on his side of the field.
Okay.
So the other thing that he could have done was to switch Weddle and Jefferson's sides so that Weddle is shaded towards Brown's side every time he plays.
And that's
it's another way to play a kind of a specific double coverage that gets your best safety on the back end against the most dangerous receiver, and I kind of like that better.
Gotcha. Well, it'll be interesting to see not only how they address it over the next couple weeks, but if they do get into the playoffs and we get to face them again, how they handle Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully that'll come up.
Right. All right, so there's the blame. We played the blame game. Offensive line blames Marty. Callers blame Pease. We're not ready to blame Pease because this is the first big lead he gave up, besides a 3-point lead.
Yeah, that's right. So we talked about that a little earlier, but he blew 1 3-point lead all year before this.
So just to wrap it up, we're not blaming him. Now we can get down to the offense side of the ball, and we can look at this offensive line who, as you said earlier, had a good game and was pushing Morty Wegg to let them finish out the game. So let's start with Stanley.
Okay, so the Steelers still have a pretty good pass rush. They use a lot of deception still with their own rush in terms of blitzes coming in and out and using those inside linebackers who have some coverage weaknesses, frankly. And Collinsworth did not completely beat on it during the game, but he mentioned it a few key times how the inside linebackers were not able to get to the outside to deal with Collins, and they were having a lot of trouble in coverage as well. But they can be sent on the blitz, and they did some of that, and they caused trouble for the line in that way, and I thought the Ravens did a pretty good job of picking up. Stanley was left on the left side. A lot of it against T.J. Watt did well for most of the game, and he continues to play well, even though he's had an injury that he's obviously still struggling through. Anyway, got a B in this game from me. And a solid overall game. And like much of the rest of the line, they had some problems on the very last drive or the last two drives in terms of things not going right. And unfortunately, I don't have my papers in front of me here. Right. But they did have some problems on those last two drives.
All right. How about James Hurst? He's been, again, successful with the pool.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that stands out of his game is that the Ravens are really using him for their power run game, which means they're pulling him from the left side, getting him somewhere over on the right side to declog the backfield, and when it starts to break down, or to get into level two and make a block. And between the combination of him and Patrick Ricard, who's playing very well, you know, they have a great power running game right now, and it's really helping to get Collins in some better spaces. I think one of the things that Collins could do better in the future is follow blocks better, but he seems to immediately seek out open space, and it's not something that has really failed him yet. When he goes to the outside, he typically is able to break the first contact and get more yards, and he had a great game after contact, which we'll get to in this game. But if he took more time, if he was Le'Veon Bell in terms of him being very patient and sitting behind the blocks and then taking a spot, he might be even more effective. So we'll see next year how they work with Collins and how they try and develop him as a back to do even more.
Yeah, because, again, they weren't even prepared this season to have Collins, let alone him be their lead rusher.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Next down the list would be Jensen, who I think I ask every week to you, is Jensen hurt?
Yeah, and he's still got some sort of problem with his elbow. He's wearing a brace on his left elbow. We never did completely hear what that was, but you know, I've got my suspicions anyway. So he's still playing well despite it. It doesn't seem like it's restricting his movement by too much. And he had another good game here. He did not get to level two as much, and that's typical when you play a 3-4 defense that the center is going to make fewer plays in level two because there's a guy directly over top of him who's responsible for kind of holding him there and deciding on which side he's going to move to maintain two gaps. So when you face a 3-4, typically the center makes fewer level two blocks. That's what happened in this game. But he's still playing well. He's not allowing the pulls to get obstructed, which is you know, one of his really big duties. The shotgun snaps that had been a problem have been okay the last few weeks. So anyway, positive on Jensen. This was a solid game. It wasn't his top game, but it was another solid game for his resume.
All right. Is Skura continue to grow?
You know, I there's some things I really like about Skura, and there are some times when he's getting beat in pass protection, and he's kind of got an awkward style. But what happens is he usually is able to engage with the block, is able to hold his block for a fair amount of time, particularly in the run game. In the pass game, he gets kind of awkward with his leverage and his feet and gets beat to the wrong side more often than you'd probably like. He did give up a quarterback hit, another 1.5 pressures in this game, but he didn't miss any blocks. So, you know, that combination of things is good. Now, generally speaking, pass blocking is more important than run blocking, so the penalties are more strict for the pass blocking errors, but still a very solid game. He got a B. What they've gotten out of Skura this year is just far more than they could have really expected out of him. And one of my big beefs with the scoring PFF has, as opposed to mine, is that it's not really taking into account how consistently Skura is on his man when he needs to be, as opposed to when he's making a plus block by moving somebody out of the way. And it's a undervalued component of offensive line play is how often can they just hold their block. So maybe sometimes as simple as Jensen's moving to level two, pins the guy for Skura, so it doesn't really appear that Skura does anything particularly great, but he holds his man, and Jensen gets to go and make a level two combination block, and that sets up the play. But Skura is an important part of that. So anyway, I'm positive on what he's done this year, and I think he definitely has a position, probably as a backup on next year's team.
All right. Austin Howard did not have a good night.
Now, tough night for Austin, and he really broke down on the last two drives. All kinds of bad things happening, culminating with the sack on the final play of the game when Joe and the rest of the Ravens, for that matter, weren't aware that the clock was going to start running again. And that was that. But he had a tough game. He had negative 11 points on the last, I think it was seven plays. So that was quite bad, and got a D for the night from me.
I see. All right, let's get away from the line now, and let's go further back with Collins. We talked about how he had a good night.
Right, so Collins had 120 yards on the night, and that alone is excellent. That's just his rushing total. I forget exactly what he had as a receiver, but it wasn't nothing or anything. We'll just take a quick look here. Oh, I hate doing this to myself here. Okay, so week 14.
It was like 20-something, right?
That's it?
On receiving?
As a receiver. Let's take a look. It takes just a second. We don't have sponsors. We can afford to do this.
Right. I could just be making
46 yards.
46 yards. Yeah, I cut him short.
Two targets, two receptions, 23 yards each, long of 37 for 23 yards on average. So anyway, a terrific game from Collins from a total yards perspective because he had 120 on the ground. Per PFF, 95 of his 120 yards came on the ground on 18 carries, which works out to 5.3 yards per carry after contact.
Yeah, that's okay. Impressive.
So yeah, I mean, he was breaking tackles all over the field. I forget the exact total if they had him for in broken tackles, but it was an eye-popping number. It might have been 8, might have even been 10 in this game this last week. And it seemed like he had about 3 on one play where he ran all the way up the sideline
his foot right out of tackles. It was impressive.
Yeah. He does a good job. That's leaving a leg. That's the old Jim Brown thing. If you're an older football fan, you remember Jim Brown. I don't, but I know that people talk about Jim Brown leaving a leg, and that's always good.
All right. Joe Flacco.
One other thing about Collins that I just thought was so significant because he has duties as a pass blocker. And in order to be there as one of the key players on third down or on any passing down for that matter was – to be able to make a good pass block. Well, on Ricard's touchdown catch, he made an outstanding shot to the knees cut block that took a player down. I think it might have been Davis on the outside. But what that does is that gets that player from getting his hands up in the air and potentially knocking down or even intercepting, which would be really horrible, the ball in flight. So it had no obstructions getting out to Ricard. And Ricard, of course, was not going to be stopped going into the end zone. And that play... immediately after it, the camera shot back to Flacco, and Flacco is sitting there pulling up Collins off the ground and congratulating him by patting on the helmet. And I thought it had to be a really big moment for Collins because I'm sure it was a big moment for Ricard. He was in the end zone, but for Collins, it was a great block.
Yeah, you know what? We'll get to Flacco in a minute. Since we're talking about that, let's talk about Ricard because he had a big night in the fullback position.
Yeah, he sure did. And boy, what he's providing is really one of the cornerstones of the offense. I mean, to have a power running game, you really need two guys who can block. And you can do it with a tight end who can move. You can do it with a tight end who can block on the same side. You can do it. You need to have a guard who can pull. And then you also can have a fullback. So it's fullback or tight end plus pulling guard. That's the combination to have a great power running game. Well, Ravens right now have one of each of the three. They have, they have Boyle and Williams, both who can block a little bit. And they have Ricard, who is one of the best, probably the best blocking fullback in the entire game.
Well, there's not many fullbacks left in the game, but yeah.
It's the best of five or seven in the whole NFL, you're right. And then they have Hurst, who's having a great year as a puller as well. So between that three, the Ravens have a legitimate power running game, and it is the strength of the offense. We mentioned, of course, Collins doesn't always run to that opening, but Ricard is really new his job. Had some fantastic blocks in this game. I had four of them picked out, and I would normally have my article up on the website. We had some illness here in the family, and we're working through that here to get everybody healthy. But the no article this week, but there are scores out on the website if you want to see those.
All right. Now we can talk about Flacco and that Flacco each week for what is this 3 weeks in a row now where Flacco continues to have decent games even
it,
with
it feels
the
that way.
He has?
Yeah, it feels that way. It's only been two. So
it's only been two? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's Detroit in this game. I think that's it. Those are the two in a row, right? Yeah. So anyway, had a good game certainly this time. Impressive in terms of still throwing medium range passes. Got good zip on the ball. He had other good times where he got lots of run after the catch from running backs. Once from or a couple times from Collins, and once from Buck Allen as well.
Right.
So what's missing from the passing game right now is that they don't really have a tight end involved in the offense in the way you'd like to. So Watson was the team's leading receiver for a while, but it's now been a couple of weeks and he's done nothing. So they need to figure out some way to get the combination of Watson, Boyle, and Williams back as part of the passing offense. And I think what I'm seeing more and more is that they'll have one or two tight ends, often two in the game with one back, and they'll be in a formation where they have two offset tight ends, one on each side, that are actually helping to chip on the outside. So they're spending more of their effort on that, sometimes chipping, sometimes even staying in and set blocking, and not doing as much receiving with those players. And if they, whether it's by trickle out pattern or whether it's by actually, you know, taking one of those situations and just choosing to run right down the seam with one of those players, it'd be nice if they would do more of that and take more shots at the tight end to try and make some yardage. And if I recall correctly, the one pass that they took on first down was a shot to the tight end that didn't work out. But there are a few of them in this game.
Right. And those passes that didn't work out, a lot of them seemed to be with Macklin. And you talked a little bit of Macklin, but he seemed not engaged on Sunday.
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it. So, you know, obviously we talked a little bit about the sideline thing, and that's a focus thing. You know, you'd really hope he was more into the game and more realizing exactly where he was on the field. You know, just the Ravens have a problem in general with players not finishing routes. What do I mean by that? Look at the Steelers because they're the perfect example. They know, because Roethlisberger will often extend a play to 4 or 5 or even 6 seconds, that they have to continue to run their route even after it would normally be done. So they would have maybe a 3.5 second route they're running, even on some of the longer ones, because that's about all it takes in the NFL to run a route. But if the ball has not come out yet, they know they have to automatically be curling back and trying to help the quarterback
and zone.
Don't just stop. And I have not seen too much of that from Macklin this year. They've gotten Macklin on a touchdown pass down the right sideline on a 9 route that was a beautiful spiral from Flacco on a vertical. They got him on another time when they had that beautiful rub route off Watson in week 1 against Cincinnati. But Macklin has not done too much to create a play after any difficulty in the pocket this year. And that's been kind of frustrating. The one time I could remember doing was one where Flacco was kind of being tripped up as they threw a little ball to the right sideline and Macklin caught it. Not the kind of big play I'm talking about. So, you know, with Roethlisberger, if that play had gone on for so long, he'd have found somebody 25 yards down the field over the middle because his guys are all trying to get open at that point.
Sure.
So, anyway, my frustration.
Right. I guess one person who was catching the ball and defending the ball and doing everything he could do on that offensive side was Mike Wallace.
Yeah, boy, Wallace, a couple of really good defensive plays there as well, and Collinsworth did a good job of pointing that out. But the one play in the end zone, I was sure that was going to be intercepted. And he stripped it right away from Burns. Yeah, and then the other one where there was a penalty anyway, but then he also stripped the ball free of the safety. I have no idea how he got that done, but he did, and that was impressive. And he also drew the flag on that play. So yeah, a lot of times Wallace has taken heat over his entire career over being a non-engaged, you know, non-caring, kind of a prima donna receiver, and he's the guy who has been the heart and soul of that receiving core in terms of being there the most plays and being the most engaged with what's going on offensively.
Right. It's tough to think that, well, we score, the offense put up 38 points. What else do we expect the offense to do? But what are some little things the offense can do to improve, especially when they're having these struggles with the wide receivers?
Right. So we could talk about bringing the tight end back into the game. And I guess we kind of covered that earlier. However they're going to do that, whether it means a little more seam route running and whatnot, they're at a good point, actually, in terms of two things. One is, doing more to protect Flacco is probably a good thing. Flacco seems a lot more confident in the pocket, and he's able to take more snaps from under center. And when he takes snaps from under center, it really brings the Ravens' play-action game back in, because you have, first of all, a fullback who can really do damage in Ricard, so the linebackers have to really respect that. And then it gives you the option to hit the tight end off play action, or to even take a deep shot off play action from time to time. And that's a big asset. But in order to do that, they have to be willing to commit more people to block and be held back among the eligible receivers to block. Ravens did that all the time in 2008. They helped Flacco grow up as a quarterback with exactly that. And play action was Flacco's thing for his first few years, and also the ability to hit that sideline route, which is the other thing they brought back into the game. You know, he's hit Moore on a couple sideline routes. He's hit Wallace on at least one. He might hit Macklin on one in this game as well, where it's just an 8-yard curl kind of by the sideline. And those kind of plays are bread and butter for the offense. If you can throw that fastball to the outside like Flacco can, it's a big asset.
Sure. All right, let's get to the offensive MVPs. But I did not come up with my three. That I would give them all to linemen because the line held really well this week. So I'm going to give you a chance to make it your three MVPs for this week.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, Josh. Thanks. We'll number three goes to Wallace. Fine game. Defensed a couple balls. Also caught some balls. The game, let's see. How many catches did Wallace have in this game? Wallace had 3 catches for 72, averaged 24 yards per catch on the 5 plays. But the other 2 plays were, one of them he knocked down and stopped an interception. Then he also drew a big pass interference call. So really nice game for him, and I think he probably deserves it. Ricard, we talked about a lot. 4 really key blocks in this game, all of which were in the middle of big run plays. So those were nice, big value-added plays for Ricard, plus the touchdown catch. And that's a play. Once you get him out there, I don't think there are too many secondary players, I'll say. Linebackers can do it, but not too many players in the secondary who are going to be able to get him to the ground easily. Right. They'll go for his legs. They might get it done, but most of the time they're not going to. And then number one for me is Collins. Another terrific game. I could have had Flacco on this list, certainly, but Collins just was so great after contact, and so many of the total Ravens yards for the entire game came after contact on him that he certainly deserves a number one.
Of course, yeah. No, that was an impressive game for Collins that not only Raven fans were noticing, but the NBC Sunday night NBC crew was also taking notice, even with them not being a fan favorite of Baltimore fans.
Yeah, they sure did. It's kind of funny. Collinsworth and PFF now, who he owns. A lot of people don't know that, but Collinsworth bought Pro Football Focus. Yes, I don't know what the price tag on it was, but I always wanted to ask Neil about that in terms of what he got on it. But Collinsworth bought it, and he moved the group from the UK to Cincinnati. So they had all these visa issues getting people into the United States and all. That was part of the thing. But they set up in Cincinnati now. So I've always been, you know. I've been out there on business. I've been thinking about visiting the offices there and see what's going on. But it is funny that Collinsworth is now owns PFF, which is providing NBC with a lot of these stats as well as some of the other
right.
networks.
Well, that's why Collinsworth said, "Oh, that's a worthy investment."
Yeah.
All right, mailbag time. This is where you go on the Twitter and send in your questions using the hashtag #FilmStudyMailbag. And Ken will answer the questions, and I'll just read them because Ken's the brains of this operation. So first one up is from Dustin Cox. Do you think the offense actually turned the corner? They had 2 high-scoring games in a row and have been playing better since the bye in general, it seems. At least less turnovers for Flacco. Flacco seems to be so much more confident and comfortable in the pocket lately.
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered some of this, but yes, I agree with that. And the Ravens are 9th in the league now in scoring offense. And if you go back to, I think it's the Miami game, they've averaged 31 points a game, which is the 2nd most in the NFL. Might be the Eagles are the only team that's ahead of them. So anyway, a very impressive run here. And yeah, I'd say the offense probably has turned the corner.
All right. The other day, the episode before this one, we did a playoff special, and the response from Edgar Catano is, if the Ravens can't beat the Browns, the Colts, and the Bengals, do we deserve to be in the playoffs?
You know, I feel like evoking a little Gandalf here when I forget who it was, Frodo, I guess, asks him, shouldn't we kill Gollum, or doesn't Gollum deserve to die? And, you know, who deserves to be in the playoffs? Whoever gets there deserves to be in. They did the things they needed to do to get in. So, yes, this is a dirty playoff appearance for the Ravens in terms of they haven't cleanly won out through this season. They haven't probably used all the gifts they have as well as they could have to maximize them this season. But they have done some things very well, played defense. They've got a lot out of their offensive line. And those two things are going to probably be enough to get them into the playoffs at this point. And they got to really hope that they don't lose their focus on the Cleveland game. It's a big game. It's not as big as the Colts and Bengals games, which have huge common opponent components to them, particularly against Buffalo. But the Cleveland game's important, too, because they might need to win three games to get in. So one of the things to look forward to here is tomorrow night, don't miss the game, because tomorrow night the Chiefs and Chargers play one of the most important games for the Ravens of the entire year. Ravens really need the Chiefs to win the West. So a win by the Chiefs in this game eliminates any AFC West team from beating them in a tiebreaker. So it's a very big deal.
I didn't even realize it was that time of the year for Saturday games.
Yeah.
And if you want to feel better about the NFL playoff system, just go look at the college bowl games coming up. When you have 41 bowls, it means you need 82 teams, and there's a whole lot of 6-6 teams in there.
Yeah, that's a real good point.
So, next question comes from Dan Boss. How does Alex Lewis fit into Greg Roman's run game system? Should retaining James Hurst be a priority in free agency? It seems like he's held up well.
Yeah, we've talked about that a couple times over the last couple weeks, but let's talk about it a little bit more. I think it's likely that James Hurst would be the best available left guard for the Ravens next year. Certainly the best one who's on the team right now. So they have Yanda presumably coming back to right guard. They'll have another guard spot open. They could give it to Skura. They could give it to Siragusa. They could give it back to Alex Lewis, or they could give it to Hurst if they re-sign him. Hurst is also by far the most expensive option of those. And the Ravens are going to have to figure out how do we save money in several places so that they can go make other moves they need to. And for that reason, I think they're only going to be able to retain one of Jensen or Hurst. And Jensen is by far the player that would be more difficult to replace given that he plays center and he's a big guy who can play center.
Right.
So,
Let's close out the mailbag with Minion Hunter, who, as we said, there's lots of little things you can look at in the game that cost the Ravens the game. And he wants to point out another one of them with how big of an effect was that missed safety on the kickoff?
Yeah, that was unfortunate. Obviously, there was a 2-point turnaround and the ball. It would have been a big deal at that point in the game. And you know, would have been better field position. I believe they held him on that drive anyway and forced him to punt.
You take all that away, it's 2 points, and you lost by 1 point. So, yes, of course, it cost them the game, like every other little minor thing throughout the game.
Every other first down that wasn't me. Right. I mean, it's almost that silly. So, you could look at this as a 39-38 loss to the Steelers. What it basically tells me is they played on the same field with the Steelers with not a whole lot of differentiation between these two teams. And yes, the Steelers made some plays when it really counted and won the game, but I don't feel at all like this is any kind of a black shroud hovering over a January trip to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and that's the good thing is there's not a whole lot of negatives. The defense will find their way. And it's nothing that we should be, we can keep up with the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ken, what is going on over at Russell Street Report?
Oh, okay. So I've got stuff up on Russell Street Report. We did three podcasts this week. So if you didn't go for the tiebreaker or the defensive podcast, take a look at those. The defensive article is up, has a lot of detail on the pass rush. You can follow me on Twitter at Film Study Ravens. Got great debate during the game going on. If you really want to get your football question answered by a whole lot of really ravenous fans, drop in your question or your comment with an at Film Study Ravens attached to it, and there'll be like 30 people who will see it right away and be jumping on it like I don't know what. But they're very good about responding and very good football fans. So, Josh, tell them how they can get to your stuff both on Twitter and your show.
You can check out Section 336 or see me on Twitter at Josh Soroka. At Section 336 this week, we discussed the Orioles perhaps losing Manny, as well as there's a little mini 336 mini episode up there that's about 8 or 9 minutes long, which is me having a little conversation with Cedric Mullins, a Oriole prospect who played for the Bowie Bay Sox last year. So you should check that out this week.
That's good. So he's a reasonable chance to be at the major league level, I would think, this next year.
I think he'll be Triple A this year and probably the following year. Maybe you know what? He's a good bet for a September call up.
Okay, so he'll be 23. If you don't make the major leagues at 23, you're kind of behind schedule. So if he doesn't make it in September, I would think it wouldn't be that great. But
you know what? If they trade Manny Machado, they might as well bring him up.
When is Adam Jones under contract for this year?
At the end of this season, we could lose Manny Machado, Zach Britton, Adam Jones, Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette, and I'm sure there's other guys on there. Zach Britton, did I say him? Other guys on that list as well that I am missing out as on this season.
Okay, it's just but while we're here, Zach Britton to the Cubs, I heard about the last couple of days. Is anything anymore?
No moves have taken place yet.
All right.
So we are still waiting and seeing. So the Orioles are out there. They're shopping. They're offering their guys. But they have very high standards to what they want in return.
I mean, I think that's reasonable. They've developed this talent that is extraordinary, and it seems just a darn shame to let it go. But like anything, when you're making a deal in business, if you have something the other guy wants it, you think it's worth more than he does.
Let's just say, when negotiation with the White Sox started, Peter Angelos apparently put the White Sox in a position where they would have to promise that they would not trade Manny Machado mid-season to the New York Yankees.
Wow. That's a big one.
Yeah, apparently Peter Angelos is very committed to making sure Manny does not play in New York in 2018.
Wow. So okay. It's a good idea.
It's a weird thing, but it also might hurt the Orioles. It might mean we don't have to see Manny in pinstripes for at least one more year.
Yeah, well, it does actually reduce his value, doesn't it?
It does. It reduces his value, which is where it's mind-blowing to me and doesn't make sense to me.
All right.
But either way, all right, Ken, well, we've got a full weekend of football coming up. Hopefully a nice game against the Browns to make us feel good about the Ravens. Maybe even a little Perriman, since it's the Browns. Maybe they'll mix him up in there, see what he can do.
He could certainly be active in this game. So.
All right, Ken, we will talk on Monday.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's list of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.